You were talking about your family again, and that sort of brief period before the Cultural Revolution, I guess, when your father had gone to this Nanshu farm.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Right. So they had about 2 or 3 years relatively peaceful life, and so my mother continued working as an accountant in the accounting office for the farm. And my father was able to do some designing job for build a dam and the buildings like that. And that using some of his knowledge he learned from college. So that combined and made them feel that they actually can live relatively normal. So the whole country was and they're going through this transition between chaotic 3 years in 59, 60, and 61 to the Cultural Revolution for another 10 years. So that was a relatively calm years of, mm-hmm. for 3 years. And so when the political environment was a little bit calm, and so my father's life, like many other intellectuals, they were being labeled as an anti-revolution, anti-government, also has a little bit more peaceful life.
Mm-hmm.
And so people, but they are still labeled as enemy of the people,
right.
But they were not treated so harshly as they were and several years ahead. And so they allowed to do the work and they using their technical expertise. So that made them feel good.
Right.
Yeah. And their colleagues were not treating them a whole lot different, even though they know that and he was not allowed to go back to teach. And they would, of course, and he cannot take any managing job and like that.
Right.
But as long as he's not using some of his technical expertise, and then that makes him feel very good about it.
Right. Yeah. At least he's with his family, right?
Right. And with family, and so that was when my first sister was born.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, my second sister was born, and then next 10 years.
Chaos.
So that was 67.
67?
Yeah.
So between, let's say, 62 to 67, you're what? You're 8. No, you're 9. 8
yeah.
and 9, 10. You're getting into sort of almost middle school now.
Still in the elementary school.
Elementary school.
Right.
What are your first memories of school then?
Very easy.
Right.
It's very easy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't have to do anything. And I guess I was smart enough in the class because I had good education from my mother and from the daycare and the preschool and before I live with my father again. So compared with the countryside of kids and in my class, and so I had a better the preschool education. And the class was not difficult at all for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that I actually remember quite a bit. The school condition was very poor. Was so poor that and there was always two class in one room. The first and the second grade in one room, and the third and the fourth in another. The whole school only had 4 or 5 teachers. So each had to teach 2 different grades in mm-hmm. one room. So we sit in the half. So one half in the first grade and the other half in second grade. So when the teacher was teaching in the one grade, the other doing the homework, and then the switch,
mm-hmm.
right? I remember this, and this is what I remember, not my mother telling me, is and when the teacher asking questions for the higher grade I was sitting in, so I answered questions for them. It was pretty damn easy.
Right.
So I never need to do any homework, and so that the kid was just amazing, and I don't need to study anything, but that
right.
was pretty easy for me.
Yeah. Now you say your mom was helping you. And in what way did she help you, though, through your school?
The teacher at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember specifically what I was teaching, but the simple math or the Chinese. So mm-hmm. that's the two major subjects, and the kids studying in the first 5 years in the school,
mm-hmm.
the math and the Chinese. And they don't start anything like natural science or social until they are in fifth grade. I think
right.
that's still the case. So that's one thing different for me here, the kids studying early on, not just English and the math, they're also studying some other subjects.
Right.
But in Chinese school, the first 4 years, they're only studying two things, Chinese and the math.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so those things, and then my mother was able to teach me, and then my father taught me some after we lived together again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the early school life was pretty fun for me.
It's yeah.
very easy.
And you say that the focus was on math and Chinese. Do you know if that was the case, too, before the revolution, or was that something that the Communist Party, that the government...
Early education in China. Okay.
Okay, you were talking about your school years.
Yeah, and that was fun. I had enough time to play. And that was really fun. Honestly, looking back, I didn't have enough. Like almost every other kid in China, was never had enough book to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and but fairly speaking, compared with other kids, and I did have a lot the help from my parents. So my father traveled quite a bit during those 3 years, and when he was responsible to design his dam and the building, and the farm was built up, and he was traveling around for a lot of purchasing.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever he travels around, he always brought back a book for me.
Oh.
And that's the one thing I was benefited tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And was not a whole lot of book, but compared with the kid that just had a notebook, other than just one book of Chinese, one book of math, I really had a chance to read something outside the classroom. And it's difficult to determine specifically what kind of influence of those early reading had on me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one thing I do remember pretty clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was able to, given chance and had opportunity to read and a lot, since even for the children books,
yeah.
I did have them to read those ones. And very few kids had a chance like that.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents, like many other Chinese parents, and traditionally, they really emphasize on the education of the children.
Mm-hmm.
They really do, really do. And they were pretty poor, and we can just barely and live and feed ourselves. It's better than the few years early on, but was not much money left.
Right.
But still, they tried to and buy me some books as much as they could. So when I was 5 or 6 years old, my father bought a radio. Boy, that was a big deal.
I'm sorry, he bought a what?
A radio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was a big deal because the whole village, no one has a radio. So my father bought one back, and I lived with a radio for a number of years. With a radio, and I was able to listen to something outside, and then again, it's difficult to say specifically how that influenced me, but and I remember clearly, and every day, and I would hold the radio, listen to something.
So, yeah. What kind of books did your father bring?
It's just a children's book, and whatever he can find,
right.
And from the bookstore or from the shop, and it's not even come close to the quality and the how wide the range are these days.
Mm-hmm.
But still,
it's just,
yeah, it's the book other than the book and I can have in the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and of course, those are the children book and they're talking about story for the children. But it's not like the book you can read today.
Mm-hmm.
And the contents of those books are pretty revolutionary, and of course, all those books must be and pass the test or exam or inspection by the government.
Mm-hmm.
And but still, the kids' book are kids' book.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. And when you had the radio, do you remember listening to any particular program? What
yes,
did you
I
listen
do.
To?
I do. There was this particular program and for the kids, and there was a called. I don't know what there's no equivalent. No, there could be an equivalent of in the here. It's something similar to the Sesame Street.
Oh yeah.
And but the content is completely different. But it's a regular program. It's not TV program. It's a radio program. But it's like once every. I think once every day afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, and I don't remember either the contents right now. But that's the program I remember. And when I get home, I listen and,
right.
Every day. And it really got a lot of my friend and my classmates envy that I could have a radio to listen to.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you bring your friends over, or did they?
Yeah, we all. You don't have to bring them over because it's just one house, one big house in the village, and
mm-hmm.
the kids always play outside. So when I would listen, they would come to them.
Right.
Yeah, just next to me, and they read my books and my radios, and so I remember when after grew up, and a lot of kids still remember those days that they come to our house to read my books.
Mm-hmm.
And then so one day I remember my father was pretty upset, and when he brought my new books back asking me what is all the books. I lost all of them. I gave out to all the friends. He said, I don't know, buy again, because I couldn't find anyone. He said, you have a master that 20 books.
Right.
They're all gone.
So in a sense you had sort of a lending library there, you know,
it
your
is,
friends
it
coming
is. It always like that. And then even later when I was grew up and I was able to get some books, and people still can come to my part of my house and they read some books. They bought it and they gave it to them and they never get it back.
Right.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, so my father actually write down the number. They know, and he knows how many books and he bought for me.
Right.
And they give me, and I still remember this small box and that he made for me. He said, when I finish, and I put those books back to those boxes. There's nothing there.
So in a sense, though, your father educated, you know, the community, in a sense, unwittingly, but he did.
Right. He did, and it was not intentional, but right. And a lot of the kids benefit with that one. I mean, of course, I was the one and they really benefit a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And so those were a few, 3 or 4 years peaceful time, and that's one of the reasons, and the people in our village, and they made a friend with him, and they respect him. And when the revolution was not so strong, and the people, when the revolution was not so propaganda, and when the country was not so chaotic, and the ordinary people, they respect intellectuals. Historically, mm-hmm. traditionally, Chinese people respect intellectuals.
Right.
They think you had education and you receive some education and they respect you. Yeah. So my friend, my father had a few good years and with our neighbors. And most of them are just ordinary, uneducated peoples.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a pretty good relation with with their neighbors.
Because interesting relationship your father had with, you know, his neighbors, I think, in a sense, because he is under the shadow, you know, being one of the pariahs.
Yeah, so that was exactly right, because he had a good relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
and when the Kadiga cut again, no one can help him. But later on, and some of those early neighbors, and they really helped him out later. And they're still friends up to now.
Mm-hmm.
They're still friends up to now, just because of the early days.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, when you're growing up in this period, how aware are you of politics, or, you know, in
nothing.
General?
Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, do your parents talk about politics?
No. They, I don't know if they did it on purpose or not. I don't remember they ever talked to me.
Right.
That they were so-called bad peoples, or enemy of the peoples, or enemy of the countries, or anything like that. I don't know if it's because I felt shameful, or they try to not let me to be negatively influenced, or try to give me a normal path of growth. But I never had any impression of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like every other boys and
right.
every girls and on the farm. So I feel no difference whatsoever until 1967.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you're growing up too, I mean, you don't live. Let's put it this way, the situation you were in, let's say in 62, 63, was better than 3 or 4 years earlier,
uh-huh.
clearly. But were you aware as a boy growing up that your family was not living the life of Riley, definitely?
No,
but
no, don't remember at all. And I had absolutely no memories in the early years that we were living in a bigger city,
right.
in a better life, or anything like that.
Yeah.
No. And my whole impression starts where I grew up. And that farm, Nanfu Farm, is where I grew up.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those early years was pretty normal. And
right.
So I only had a good memory of those
right.
first 3 years at that farm. Yeah.
Okay, so you're listening to the radio, you're reading books,
yeah.
You're playing a lot because you're doing really well at school, and I freeze up a lot of time.
Oh, I probably did the best in the school. It's not intentional, it's not so easy. I really don't remember. I was studying hard or anything like that.
Right.
It's just so easy.
It just came to you.
Yeah, just so easy. And so I don't have to do anything, bring any homework. And I can finish all the homework before the class even finishes.
Right.
Yeah. But probably the homework was not a big deal anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. So what other activities or interests do you have now on this farm when you're growing up?
Oh, that was a good time. And I remember, we can still rule the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can do all kinds of stuff. And I remember one thing we do is go to fishing. Not fishing the fish, but fishing the frog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fishing the frog is fun. You can see the frog is pretty dumb.
Right.
Yeah, they eat the bait and then they lost, and then you can fish them again. So I remember those early days. That was fun.
Right.
That was fun, right? And yeah.
You wonder how frogs survive, you know, being as dumb as they are.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb, it's really. And I can't believe that if you caught a fish and you lost, and then they will ever come to bite again.
Mm-hmm.
But frog, it does.
Yeah. What kind of games did you play when you were growing up?
Yeah, all kinds of games. And there's not a similar game here. I don't know how to describe this. I don't know what you call that stuff. And they can rotate on the, I don't know if you know that kind of toy or not. And I think...
Or like a top? Or
it, and it, So if you put on the ground, on the floor, they keep on rotating, but you keep on and splash it, and they keep on rotating.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
yeah, I don't know what kind of. I know. See, the kids here play this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and that was fun. And that we can play on the way to school or on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and like a lot of kids will play a lot of hide and seek games like that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a very playful. And my first few years in the elementary school, in the first 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was 3 years. Yeah. The class was so easy. I can add one thing. And I was studying my first the grade, and they said, "Man, you don't need to go to second grade. Why don't you put in a third grade?"
Hmm.
I don't know what means jumping grade. Hmm. But later on they tell me that we jumping for one grade. And to me was not a whole lot of difference because it's still pretty easy.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your parents, are helping you at school. You know, your father's bringing home books.
Yeah.
Did they express to you their expectations about, you know, what you should do when you get a little older, about college? And
not much.
No.
Not much. And I don't remember that. And thinking back, I can understand why is that. Because they don't know what kind of expectation they could have.
Yeah.
And they was too young, and they were still living under the shadow. And they don't know what kind of the future I could have. Because
mm-hmm.
and even though they say that you're not guilty by association, but you are.
Yeah.
But you are. And a lot of kids and born in a family like me, they were allowed to have the opportunity available to other kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably aware and that those situations could happen to me.
Right.
And even though they still try to give me normal life and encourage me, try to be positive, but I don't remember we talked about a lot what I want to be, what I could to become
mm-hmm.
when I grew up. And then, well, the one thing, I remember that I dreamed a lot since I want to be when I was little, but that was after reading those books. Not really from my parents.
Right.
But one thing I did not dream to become was a scientist.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know what scientists look like.
Yeah.
I have no way to dream that once. And the few things that I did dream for is, and I dreamed three things. One was to become a surgeon.
Right.
Yeah, I just somehow just so every surgeon, I said, man, that's pretty powerful. It's pretty simple, straightforward.
Yeah.
You just take a simple knife, you cut, and you kill the patient. That's it. And the second thing was to become a general. In the army.
Right.
I said, man, that's a pretty powerful too.
Right now.
Yeah. And the third thing is to become an astronaut. Yeah, not really fly in the sky, but studying and astrology.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's one thing I learned by my father. And he liked kind of stuff. And so we remember in the summer, and it was pretty hot, stay inside.
Mm-hmm.
So we all and stay outside and just have leisure time. And in the early evenings, and we would look at the sky, and I remember quite clearly, and he would tell me, yeah, the name of the individual skies,
oh, yeah.
How to recognize them. And, well, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about religion. Did you have any type of religious training? Did your parents have?
No.
No.
And that was not even allowed to mention in China.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the religious in China is actually a pretty interesting phenomenon. And there was not a religion like a Christian in the Western country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But Chinese culture does have several religions themselves, but not the one, a single one that can overwhelm the history or the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you call the Kongxue as a religion, that's the one being consistently and educate people for thousand years, and they inherited, and the people learned, but that's not really religious. It's a Kongxue.
Mm.
It's more of a philosophy. It's an emphasis on the education and emphasis on the Torah, on the Torahs. But it's not religious. There's nothing to worship of.
Right.
Right. And of course, by the time and when I was growing up, and after 1949, and even the Kongxue was not even allowed, and the only thing you can study religiously. Is a communist.
So even Confucius, that was
not allowed.
Prohibited.
No, it's prohibited, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you can study is communism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they were not even emphasized a lot on the socialism. Of course, the capitalism was was worse than the whole world.
Right.
When I grew up, I really had this very dark image about the capitalism, about the United States, about the whole Western country. I know very little, but every time you think about this, it's bad.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did you come, I mean, how did you learn about the United States? How did you receive this propaganda?
Not much at all. And it's all based on, it's entirely from the government controlled propaganda.
Yeah.
And everything was bad. Right. And the 60s, and the only thing we learned is American is invading everybody, in particular Vienna.
Yeah.
And they send their troops to invade, to occupy other countries, to bombing other countries. And the United States or the West country is full of drug and violence.
Yeah.
There's nothing good at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were never told that the science and the technology is pretty advanced, and the freedom is a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, free world is a bad word. Free world means the capitalism, means the bad place.
Okay, how about, okay, so religion is prohibited, but are there, I mean, is it still being practiced though in some form at the ground? No.
That you can easily go to prison just for that.
Really?
Oh, it's completely prohibited.
Huh.
Yeah, and then, you can't do it openly, even you do secretly. And once you discover it, and you'll be in huge trouble. You definitely go to prison for practice religious. And keep in mind, those early days, that was very much a police country. Okay, and they don't have necessarily have a policeman live in every village, but the whole country is operated like a police country.
Right.
Yeah, and they controlled on every level, very, very tight.
Hmm.
And then everything you say, everything you do, and then there's no way you can keep any secret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your bank account is being controlled. Well, there's no bank account actually for most people's, right? And how much you are receiving and what you do, what you say to your neighbor, to your family, there's nothing secret.
Mm-hmm.
The government encourage, if not require people to report anything to your friend, your relative might have said that is not very good or nice to the government or to the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
They strongly encourage people to tell their relatives.
That's amazing.
And that's one of the worst things that happened during the Cultural Revolution. Not only the country, the development was delayed. And in my view, I think the worst things happened during the Cultural Revolution is the really damaged the relationship and between the family members and between friends. And
right.
It's just simple words to describe it. It's just betrayal.
Right.
The government encouraged that, required that. The husband and the telling the husband and the son and the daughter telling their father or mother, say, well, my father said something and yesterday, something like that. It's happened all the time.
Yeah.
And at the end, nobody can trust anybody.
Right.
Yeah, and that's just really broken the basic bone between people.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's no family relationship, there's no friendship between friends, I mean, this won't be any stable society. And that, I can't say it's beyond repellent, but I think we are, as a society, still suffering from it.
Right.
And people always say, well, don't trust everybody completely, because they can always brought the example that and they, something you said to a close friend of yours, and the friend turns you in order to save themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens just all the time.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting, because I remember reading, too, that one of the, at least, effects of the Great Leap Forward was that it did break down the family. And it seems to me, with the beginning of the Cultural Revolution,
yeah,
this
and
sort
it's
of
just so bad.
Self-policing.
Self-policing. Right. It's really, everybody been experienced that. Then you are supposed to tell the government, to tell the party what you heard about your friend, your families,
right.
And that you could be told, and you could be turned in by your family or your friend. So no one can trust anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't see what can be worse than that. If the factories have been shut down and the education is lost, and those things can be repaired, and you can get back to normal. And if you lost 10 years, you say, well, I spent the next 10 years in the development. But the people's relationship like that is a fundamental to the society. And it's take a generation to repair it. And the early people, nowadays, even now, 20 years after the Cultural Revolution, you talk to those older generations, like my parents, they're still full of suspicious to the people. And they just inherited. They just experienced such bad experience. and see so much, experience the first hand, they always tell me that be careful your friend. And there's no loyalty.
Yeah.
By the end, yeah, just totally destroyed.
All right. Well, you've got these 3 years then at Noshu Farm that sound pretty idyllic. They sound pretty nice.
Yeah, that's very good life. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then your parents have two daughters, your younger sisters. And then the Cultural Revolution starts, which is another entire period of turmoil. Can you describe a little bit what it was like growing up for you?
Oh, boy. That was pretty bad. Now I remember those days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty bad. So I think 66 was a day, it was a year the country started, but was not affected locally until 1967.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 years old. I was already in the middle school. And then the whole country was chaotic, and my family was chaotic. Oh, boy. That was probably the worst time I can remember.
Oh, yeah.
The whole family when I grew up. So my father was forced to separate from my mother again from the family. And he was taken out of the family and put into the camp. And then physically beating all the time.
Oh my God.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. And I remember one night after he came back from the camp, we slept on the same bed. And he held my hand and touched here. And he came back with three broken
in his rib, just under his
right
rib. Three
broken ribs. Yeah. I couldn't say anything. He just told me that's what happened to him. I didn't see the worst part. But I know, and like many other peoples, and so-called enemy of the people, and he was beaten pretty badly,
mm-hmm.
yeah, physically,
mm-hmm.
and not mentioning and mentally, that was really, really traumatized, and for both my father and my mother,
mm-hmm.
and quite long sometimes, yeah, it's much worse than the 4 years between 59 to 62. They were simply just separate, you still work, but nobody beat you.
Right.
But this was much worse. Yeah. And also, very bad falling on me as well. So I was living not with my parents anymore, so now I was living in a middle school. And everybody knows that my parents was bad people,
mm-hmm.
so I was a kid from those bad families. Okay, and I was treated differently, and I was not, there was no any respect from my classmates anymore, and they beat me as well.
Wow.
Yeah, and they teasing me, and they beat me, and then I was little in the class because I jumped the class, the grade,
mm-hmm.
and so that was pretty bad years, and we tried not talking too much with my parents.
Yeah.
But that was a very bad memories.
Now, while this is happening, though, I mean, you're a kid, you're 9 and 10. How
yeah.
did you understand what was happening? How
I
did you explain it?
I don't understand it completely.
Yeah.
But I don't remember now. I felt I was different from other kids. But that was happening to me all the time. And I think I do understand a lot. Then I see those big labels and they on my father. And then they humiliated them,
yeah.
both of them, my father and my mother. They really humiliated them, and the way that nowadays people just cannot imagine. For example, they have to go in the middle of the day, in the middle of summer, and they just on their knee for an hour, and the sign and the big label and hang on their neck,
mm-hmm.
say why they're bad. They have this meeting and every week or every couple of weeks, and they have to go to stage just on their knees and then. And being bitten by the peoples and the people yelling them and
mm-hmm.
they have to self-criticize and to confess what kind of crime they had committed. Something
yeah.
I don't know how they did it. I mean, there was no crime, and then but you have to make up and say you are criminals and you are anti the party, you're anti the government, anti the people, and that you're bad people. So you have to keep on saying how bad you are
right.
to make a so-called confession.
Hmm.
And this time my mother was not able to escape, so he was also and digged out and just treated just as bad as my father.
Right.
So I know I was in a bad family, and I was different from my classmates, and but that was not the worst part. The whole family of five people living in four different places, my father in the camp, my mother in the family, I live in the school. and my mother just could not afford or could not have energy and any energy at all. And after all this, taking care of my two younger sisters.
Right.
So both of them have to be sent to their relatives. So my sister, they grew up in the first couple of years and not even with my mother. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the worst time of coming, I think it was early 68. And finally, they told my mother, you cannot even live here, so we're going to send you to a even poorer place.
Mm-hmm.
And not you have to separate from your family, from everyone else. Now we're going to send you to a rural place, and that's a very, very rural place. There's no electricity, no running water, no contact. And it's not a whole lot different from the regular camp. So she has to move all by herself.
This was part of a larger movement, right, to bring
yes.
all intellectuals
yes, yes.
back to the
yeah,
countryside.
Yeah, actually know that pretty well. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a part of it. And she had to send out, even though she was already living in the country, countryside, but in that part of the village, and so that was, and they are still like and a number of families. You're associated with this department of from the university. So you're sort of living in a relatively good environment in the farm, but now she had to send out to a very rural village.
Mm-hmm.
It's only like 5 or 6 families in the whole village.
Wow.
And when she got there, I think it was the first week or so, and the Red Guard came into the house. And what do you call this? What do you call when the FBI comes to somebody's house and they just check and they examine?
Oh, yeah, sort of.
This is what described that once.
Oh, what's the word for it?
They really tangle around just looking for anything.
Yeah, they're doing sort of a search and seizure kind of thing.
Search, and probably even worse than that, because I don't know how FBI search people's house, but when the Red Guard come to your house, there's nothing for them to search. You got being searched for 10 times already. They still come to search you to see whether they can find anything. I don't know what they're looking for. Anything that can be labeled as anti-revolutionary. I mean, like, you would think it's ridiculous and crazy. And they found the one textbook my father used when he was in the college. That was a Russian, I believe. Yeah, my father studied with Russian when he was in the college. They said, how can this guy study Russian? Because the Soviet Union, that was fighting with China at the time, was labeled also as a bad country.
Right.
So he must be a spy for Soviet Union.
That's amazing, because if it had been 5 or 6 years earlier, there would have been, that would have been fine, wouldn't it? Because there would have been better relations.
Yeah, well, there was a good relation with the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy things like that. And you have a good course that, wow, you're living in such a good life. And where did you get the money for those ones? You just couldn't reasonably explain anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst is at the end, when they finished search, the whole house was like, totally messed up.
Mm-hmm.
They just live like that.
Yeah.
And you clean up. By the time you clean up, they come back again.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times they're being searched like that. And anybody can go. Anybody can go to their house to search at any time they want.
In the name of the Red Guard, or
at any time they want. It's no means to get the permission from anybody. They just feel that, well, today let's search somebody's home, and they just go there and they just dig it out and they just turn upside down and at the end they left.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow maybe another group will come in again, just doing that one.
So you had no privacy either. You were being invaded, in a sense.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing. They can come to your house at any time they want. So the worst time my mother couldn't live.
Mm.
Yeah, the worst day he remembered was he actually wrote the suicide notes already.
Oh, wow.
And so he asked somebody to call me back. He can't get anybody. She couldn't get anybody back because my father, she couldn't even contact. So my sister was sent away. So she asked me back, and I guess want to just talk to me one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the incident, and she still remember nowadays. And whenever she think about that one, she still would cry.
Yeah.
She said, just so close, on the brink, she's committed suicide.
Right.
Just couldn't live anymore. And she said, I don't remember the details, but I remember vaguely that I sense something going to happen. And so I told her that, no matter what happens, you got to live. I was 10 or 11 years old. And then my mother came on saying, I saved her life.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and she still remember very clear. She said, I saved her life twice, that's once.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, she had a heart attack, I got her, he had the operation. She said, she wrote a note, and she didn't give it to anybody, and she just about to give it to me. and the whole house was just totally messed up because it was searched again that day. And he was just lost the whole, complete whole energy to clean up, to put it back. Mm-hmm. Not like before, and after searching, they should put it again this time, and they just give up. Mm-hmm. There's no point to put it back, because they just...
Yeah, it's an amazing upheaval.
Yeah, and I was pretty grateful that my mother was tough enough to survive. Otherwise, I don't know what could happen to three of us. Yeah, there won't be a family because so many people will not be able to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you hear people commit suicide all the time.
Oh yeah, in fact, the numbers about those who died.
Yeah, I know a number of them myself. Even when I was little, mm-hmm. I remember one of our neighbor, and his grandma just jumped into the well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it happened all the time. Yeah.
Okay. So this is around 67, 68, 69.
Yeah, the worst I think was 68 and 69. That was the worst time.
Right.
And the whole country as well as for my family. Yeah.
And when you say that they humiliated your family, they went in and searched your house. Are you talking about people that you knew in this community who would come in? You knew them by name?
Yeah. And I still knew them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was the people, they live with you, then they were your neighbors and your co-workers, and then they just hang around and just they just treat you like that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why I said this, and one of the worst things that happened to the Kaljuruji is not just the loss of technological development or the production like that. It's and they just turn the people against the people.
Mm-hmm.
These people are neighbors, are ordinary neighbors. Now all of a sudden, and they just one come to the other house, just search and become enemy.
Right.
Yeah. They're just like that.
Yeah. Okay. Your family then is separated, it's fragmented at this point. But take us through the years, say 70 to time, maybe when you get up to about college or just before college. What are those years
yeah,
like?
Yeah, they were 3 or 4 years, a very, very bad time. And the 2 years were so bad, and the whole family was so bad. And from that point on, I was never really living with my family until I graduated from high school.
Oh, yeah.
So I lived outside in the middle school and high school for almost 6 years. And in a boarding school, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Education-wise, I was not getting much at all because there was nobody doing any teaching at the time. It's still called a school, though.
Right.
But probably studying a couple hours a day and just reading the mouse little red book. That's about
right.
it. And there was not much education, no mathematics, no chemistry, and no physics teaching, and even though it's called a middle school. And at least for the first couple of years, and most time we actually work. I was 11 years old, I remember, and we had to go to a field to grow rice to feed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was not a good time, man. That was not. And not only the hardship of the work, but also that mentally, and I start realizing, and even though I'm not necessarily a bad kid, but I'm from a bad family.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I could not change. But I was being told, and constantly that I have to make extraordinary effort and to perform better than my classmates, and so that I can be considered as normal, or just like one of them, because I carry this extra burden.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I understand it completely, but I do realize, I did realize that I was different from other kids.
Right.
Yeah.
You knew the punishment, even though you couldn't understand why.
I knew the punishment, I've been punished, actually, all the time. And so I have to make it self-criticize in front of my entire class, and for something I couldn't even remember what I said, and there's anything that can be labeled, and there might be my showing any kind of sympathy to my family, and then I would self-criticize for that. But anything I said, I did. For example, if I would go home and the last weekend and help my mother doing something, and I would self-criticize and confess, so that was. That was a mistake, that was wrong, I will not do that again, and just things like that.
How often did that happen, that sort of self-confession in front of a class?
Pretty often, actually.
Yeah.
And for the worst time, that was probably 69, I did it several times in that whole semester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, were there other students like you who were these sort of bad families who had to make these public self-confessions? And
I think I was the only one in the class.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I do know a few other kids like me, but was not in my class. And I don't think I was the worst one being treated. And I remember there was a girl and one or two grades above me, and had a very similar family situation like mine.
Mm-hmm.
And she was kicked out.
Yeah.
She was not even allowed to go to school. And at least I was able to stay in this school and then with other boys and the girls and in the class, still as a student,
yeah.
quote by quote. And I was able to learn something, and even though only an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was important. If you're out of school and you can never get it back,
yeah.
which means you're out, and even though you're only like 11 or 12 years old. Yeah, mm-hmm. Unable to go to school was probably more severe punishment than anything else for the kids. Even worse than you have to make a self-criticism or confession in front of your class, getting
yeah.
humiliated. But that's still probably better than not allowed to even go to school.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
That was, in a sense, you were lucky, you know, in a strange
way. I
was
lucky than that girl. I remember that girl, and she was never able to get back to her
yeah.
normal life. And so after the Cultural Revolution, and she was never able to go to any high school, and she just stayed in the countryside.
Right.
And there was no career, and she was not even able to, even though she was allowed to later on, to apply for the university, because she never got any education above seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
She was just out.
Now, why do you think you were allowed to stay in the school? Do you know?
No. Then it depends on how the treatment is. It's so chaotic, and it's just depending on one time what person said. And I don't know, maybe his father did something probably more.
So it was unpredictable.
More dramatic or more annoying, and to some leaders or cadres, and we got to punish him more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know what the difference made, and there was no sense or no any reasoning behind all this. And so I could be the one and being kicked out, and she could be the one just stay in. There's no any specific reason for that.
Now, in class, you said they're reading Mao's Little Red Book, about the only thing that's being read
yeah.
for the most
the whole
part.
Country,
I mean, what was your conception of Mao? Who I mean, had you ever
God?
Yeah,
the only word described nowadays was a God. I mean, that was nothing, and that was. If you ask anything, what's my first impression about Mao? And he's not a person. He's not a human being.
Right.
He's a God. I cannot possibly relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was never trying to imagine what he's like and in an ordinary sense.
Right.
Yeah. It's just like a God. Yeah.
Okay. What happens after the middle school? Where do you go? First of all, where is the middle school?
It's still in the same farm.
Okay.
In the same farm called the Nanfu Farm. I think by the 69 or 70s, the country started calm down a little bit. Still pretty chaotic. And that was a time when all these high school graduates were sent to countryside, and there was no college anymore. But the beaten is decreasing, decreasing. And the people still have to go to work and to make a living and to grow rice. It was a little bit calming down. So I think my second year in the middle school and the third, I spent 3 years in the middle school,
mm-hmm.
from 68 to 71. So in the 69 or 70 or 70 or 71 was a little bit calm, but was not much learning at all. And we had actually chemistry class, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was, that was like a seventh or eighth grade. And then, we actually had a little bit of chemistry class. That's amazing. We even had the English class, you believe it or not.
Yeah.
And the only thing we learned is the 26 and the letters. And the one was wrong, I remember.
<That's>
yeah, the teacher could not pronounce the W right. And I remember pretty clearly. And I think he taught us to pronounce the W as a vowel.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how he got that class. So I remember the way I learned English, it was S-T-U-V-V. Instead of S-T-U-V-W.
Right.
So that's all the English I learned, yeah,
mm-hmm.
in high school. Yeah. So by the time I graduated from the middle school in 1971, and all my education is pretty much at elementary level. And I graduated about when I was 13 years old, when I graduated from middle school, and very little, very short, and I just can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to do any job, and physically, just not possible. So my mother was very, very concerned, and they didn't know what she can do for me. So there was no any further education available to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
After middle school, that's it. Okay, there was not even high school available to anybody at the time. All the high school kids were actually sent to countryside. And of course, there was no any colleges. Mm-hmm. So I was 13 years old, and my mother was really wondering what she can do for me. And not much. So I worked in the farm kind of for several months.
Right.
And then I just go with other people, and they're older than I am, and they're a little bit stronger. And then I remember the project we were working on was to dig a well.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cold days, yeah. And it's pretty hard labor.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let me turn over the tape.
Okay.